This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit Paylus Inchpesek, my friends. How are you, Brian?
I am doing just fine.
Hey, folks, we got a great show for you today. Before we go any further on the show, I'm not going to be able to go to Armenia. I know a lot of people out there said, hey, when you come in, Rafi Manishian, he was excited to have me in Armenia in November. Actually, our boss here, he said, you know what, November may not be good. And I totally agree with him. And I said, well, when do you want to go? And he said, how about in spring? Spring would be good in Armenia.
Yeah, spring would be gorgeous.
Yeah. So I said, you know what? I think that would be even better, too. So, folks in Armenia, I'm sorry. Rafi, we're going to have to take a little rain check on the whole entire Armenia trip in November, but we will be going in spring, okay? All right, folks. So whatever plans we had in November, let's make it in spring. Hey, Brian, our guest this week is Barad Maronyan, and Barad is a filmmaker earning numerous awards for his beautiful documentary work on the Armenian Genocide. His work, though, is very interesting, Brian, because Barad kind of extracts from the genocide and focuses on certain aspects without, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, when I tell you the Armenian Genocide, you think of it as a whole and what happened and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he kind of, like, looks at it in a way that the orphans, the women and all this. So it's very interesting, and we have Barad on right now. Barad, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Jano. Pretty good. How are you?
Did I mention this in the right presence here? I mean, did I say that right? Introduce?
Yes.
Okay, good.
What I usually... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know, I looked at your work, and it's amazing that, you know, all our years we've talked about the Antraniks, we talked about the Nishtes, we talked about the Kevorks, but there's unsung heroes of our women, and, you know, they went through so much catastrophic, just psychological ordeals. I mean, for us as males, we fought, we died, or we just got killed. But seeing your children taken away from you, seeing all, it had to be much tougher on the women.
Very, very true. But, you know, we do, you know, touch upon what you just said, but we concentrate on their resilience, you know, the way they survived, the way they made it to, you know, after they went to these horrific experiences, they were able to come to United States and, you know, some to Canada, some to Europe, and they made it. I mean, they made it as human beings. They lived the American dream, and they got married, they had children, great, you know, grandchildren, and some of them made it pretty big. You know, I can give you the example of, for example, Hatun Yapugyan. She was this freedom fighter, you know, back in Armenia. She protected her village, her land. She saved, you know, hundreds of lives, and then she made it to the States. She settled in Fresno. She had kids, you know, grandkids, and one of her granddaughters is Marilyn Hamilton, who, in fact, you know, she got in this, you know, really bad accident. She was a, you know, this very, you know, active lady, in her late 30s, she got in this tragic accident on a hang glider. She became paraplegic, but she never gave up. She said, you know, my grandma never gave up. She went through war. She went through the genocide. She survived. She, you know, brought my mom up and me. I'm not going to give up.
Inspiration, so, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So she invented this amazing, wheelchair that allows, you know, paraplegic athletes to, you know, continue on their sports. And it was an amazing multi-million dollar business. She turned it into a multi-million dollar business, and she invented this quickie. And in fact, a replica of that quickie, the first wheelchair, is in the Smithsonian now. I mean, it's an amazing discovery or invention, in fact. It was an amazing invention that she did.
Wow.
That's what we concentrate on, you know, the survival of these women, the triumph of these women.
Yeah. Well, let's back this up a little bit. Let's back this up. How did you, obvious question, I you hear it all the time, how did you get involved in something like this? Well, what made you take this project on?
Well, you know, my background is I worked for PBS, actually, PBS Network here in Miami for 21 years. And then,
beautiful,
you know, one day I decided, you know, I should do things that I really, really love. And I started doing small, you know, experimental Armenian themed films, you know, short films. And people loved them. They said I should, you know, really concentrate on that. So, and one day I was reading an article about this, you know, by this amazing award-winning reporter from England, actually. He wrote this article about 1,000 orphans who were forcibly being converted into, you know, to become Turks, you know, into Islam and Turkish. I mean, they were making them Turks in this orphanage in Lebanon. I said, this is an amazing story. I have to, you know, do some research on it. And then 3 years after that, I came up with Orphans of the Genocide, which, you know, the documentary that's called Orphans of the Genocide, which did very, very well. And then when I was working on these orphans, you know, the stories of these orphans, I discovered that a lot of these orphans were saved by women. You know, some were Armenian women, and a lot of the times they were American, European, Scandinavian women who were, you know, like who saved thousands of, you know, Armenian lives from the genocide. And I believe that that's the reason why, you know, the Armenian diaspora exists. Because of these women, you know, because the men were gone. As we know, the way the genocide was set up, they were getting rid of the men. First thing what they did is they divided the family unit, you know. The men, they took the men away. They put them in forced labor, or they killed them, you know, right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the children and the women were left. A lot of the women were taken in as, you know, as wives, you know, forcibly married into Turkish, Kurdish, Muslim families. And the rest who survived, that's what I'm concentrating on.
Yeah, it's pure ethnic cleansing. Get rid of the old and the young. Let's convert them to Islam. So you went on the basis of documentary. What made you go that route?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, I'm a PBS person. I was
right.
Trained and worked for PBS 21 years, and I feel more comfortable in documentaries, you know, producing or, you know, making documentaries than fiction film. And I believe that, you know, telling a story of a factual, you know, event that really happened, like the Armenian Genocide, documentaries come in as a very handy tool, educational tool for, you know, stories like this. Because,
right.
You know, Armenian Genocide concerns the Armenians, that's a fact. But it also should concern the Americans, the Europeans, the Turks, because it is an international issue. It's a human rights issue. It's a human issue. It's not only an Armenian issue. Yeah, it happens to happen to the Armenians, but, you know, it also involved the whole world in reality.
Right. Here's a question that it's kind of a weird question, but how do you know when enough is put into a documentary? When you're shooting a documentary, is a filmmaker ever satisfied of, do I have enough information, or should I put more documentary, You know where I'm going with this?
Yes. You're never satisfied, Jono. You're never satisfied.
I thought you, so.
Yes, you know, it's like any artwork. An artist starts a painting, you know, they work on it for months and sometimes years. And then after it's done, they go, you know, a few years later, they look at it, they go, I wish I did it this way, I wish I did it that way. But in my case, with both of these Armenian-themed documentaries that I did, Orphans of the Genocide and Women of 1915, you know, each one took me roughly about 3.5 years, you know, of research and filming and travels. And as you saw, you know, we traveled practically around the world. You know, wherever the story took us, we went there. We went, you know, all the way from Argentina to Europe to Lebanon to Armenia to Turkey to Australia, you know, to get these stories, because I wanted to hear it from, you know, firsthand, from, you know, people who were involved or their families were involved in these stories. You know, like, I'll give you the example of, you know, Steve Jobs, for example. We all know who Steve Jobs is, but only maybe a few of us know who, where he came from, where his roots are. Yes, he was adopted. And he was we know that he was adopted, but he was really adopted by an Armenian mother. You know, his mom was an Armenian lady by the name of Clara Hagopian. And how, and you know, where did Clara Hagopian come from? You know, I looked into that, and then we found that Clara Hagopian's mother was a genocide survivor. You know, she went through the genocide. She went through hell. And then she got educated. She became a missionary. She made it to the United States. She got married, and she had these two daughters. And these two daughters, you know, didn't have kids. They both of them adopted, and one of them adopted this little child. You know, they named him Steve, and Steve was raised as an Armenian boy when he was growing up. You know, wow. He spoke Armenian. He ate Armenian food, you know, and it's amazing. I mean, the point I'm trying to make, had this woman didn't survive the genocide,
right? The connections,
the
threads.
Steve Jobs could have been a totally different person. I'm not saying he was going to be a bad person, but maybe he wasn't going to create Apple computers, you know, because we know that when you grow up, it's your environment who makes you, you know, who you're created by your environment. So he was, you know, he was raised in this environment. And, thanks to that, Emma, Victoria Artinian, this lady who came to the United States and helped save this grandchild that actually changed the world. I mean, he literally changed the world with this apple, you know.
No, you're quite right about it. I mean, it's like... we don't think about stuff like that, but that woman had so much influence on him that changed the global aspect of everything to come. It's amazing. You're definitely right about that. I read a little bit on you, and is it true that you actually went to Turkey?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. Tell us a little bit about that. I don't know how. Tell me the whole thing about that. Just to go there and tell them what you're doing and all that is beyond me.
Well, we were there. We made a point of being in Turkey the day of the 100th anniversary, you know, of the Armenian Genocide. So 2015, as we know, the genocide took place in 1915. April 24 is the, you know, date that we observe.
Sure.
For, you know, commemoration of the genocide. So April 24, 2015, 100 years later, we made a point of being there and seeing what's going on. And we knew that there were some commemoration events were, you know, organized. So we went to a few of them, and one of them that we filmed, and you see, we end the film with that, the scene that we end the film with, one of the scenes actually, you know, is the thousands of Armenian children and grandchildren of the genocide survivors congregated at Taksim Square, the biggest, you know, the most famous square in Turkey, in Istanbul, and did this event, you know, open public event. And it was an amazing experience. It was a life-changing thing, you know. So we filmed that event, and we have a scene from that event in, wow, in the film.
Wow.
I mean, one of the other reasons I went to Turkey, actually, was to meet this tour guide who took Steve Jobs and his wife in 2007 on a yacht tour, on a private yacht tour in Turkey, in Istanbul. And, you know, because I knew that he had written a blog about his experience with Steve Jobs. And, you know, I wasn't successful. So anyway, I don't know if you saw that part of the film. We interviewed this guy eventually, and he told us how he met Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs was mad at him because he really denied the genocide, basically. He said, in this country, we don't call it a genocide. And Steve Jobs was so upset about that he cut his vacation short. He still had 3 days with this guy on that private jet. He asked him to take him back to the airport, and he got on his private jet and came back home. And he didn't want to continue on with this because he was so upset that this guy really kind of denied the genocide.
I'm sorry to jump in, though. What did he expect the Turks were going to say, though? I mean, when you're vacationing in Turkey and they've been on their mind frame, been taught that never happened. I mean, what did he expect?
What I don't know what he expected, but he was so upset because the guy was giving a history kind of
in their version.
That's what it's taught. That's what they tell the tourists. I mean, they're showing these buildings, these beautiful buildings that, mind you, most of them were, you know, the architects were Armenians back then, you know, like Dolmabahçe and this and that. And then they got to point to this Greek church, which was converted to a mosque. And, you know, he said, what's this? He said, well, this is Hagia Sophia. Then Steve said, okay, where are they now? Why is it converted to a mosque? Because he said, because of the war, the Christians left this country. He said, why did they leave? He said, well, they left because there was a war. He said, no. I know the fact. I know the history behind this. The reason they left is because you killed them. For example, he said, you killed 1.5 million Armenians. There was a genocide. He said, no, there was no genocide. You know, people died. So that's how we started. You know, he was so aggravated. And he said, you know, this is unacceptable. So he just left.
Yeah,
he was so upset about this whole thing. And this story is coming from this Turkish guide that we interviewed eventually, and he's telling the story. I mean, it's not even Steve Jobs'
version.
Version, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an amazing turn-off event, and, you know, it's an amazing experience. I mean, that's what I can tell you. And it's we went to Western Armenia. We went to ruins of Ani, the 1,001 churches, as we know, which was built in the 10th century. It was an amazing, amazing site.
Did you find any resentment that you're there doing what you're doing?
Well, let me tell you this. I'll try to be as brief as possible because this can go really, really deep. I mean, when we were there, we felt that there was a change. I'll give you one example. We were in a little village outside Van, about an hour away from Van. It was a Kurdish area. And some of the local people told us there is an old Armenian, remnants of an old Armenian church here. It's like partially destroyed. So we went there, and this lady stood in front of the door. She said, "Listen, I know that this belongs to you, but," she said, "I took care of this place for 100 years. I'll open the door for you if you agree that 50% is yours, 50% if mine." Wow. Is mine.
Wow.
I thought to myself, I said, wow, you know, without even negotiations, we got 50% already.
I know. I know that too. It's amazing.
Of course. I mean, it's, but the problem is, the sad part is that they were not, I mean, it's not the people's fault. They were taught the opposite, that the Armenians were troublemakers and we threw them out. And nobody in any country throws any part of the population out. That's genocide. You know, they're committing genocide there. You can't just throw ethnically cleanse part of the population just because you don't like them, or they're Christians or Muslims or this or that. That doesn't work anyway. You know, it doesn't work. If you do that, it's genocide, and you're, you know, you have to pay for it somehow.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing experience, you know. So that was one example. So what I was trying to tell you is the unfortunately, people, people are 40, 50 years old now. They were not taught about the genocide until probably 15, 20 years ago. With the advent of the internet, they started to, you know, learn about it, because the truth is out there. And now there is some, you know, I shouldn't say change, but there is a cross-section of the Turkish society that they know. For example, there are, you know, places named after Armenians, and they're still, they still use them today. You know, for example, they call certain places the Armenian well, or the Armenian cave, or whatever, because, you know, Armenians were brought in there and, you know, were buried there, were killed and thrown in these wells or caves or...
And they acknowledge that. They acknowledge that, right?
They do acknowledge that, yes. And I mean, I was surprised that, you know, to hear, especially from the, you know, some of the Kurdish population, they even apologized. I mean, they said, you know, we know what happened. We're sorry about what happened. And, you know, I've even heard that. But this doesn't represent the official
recognition of the government.
The government. You know, it's just a small section of the population that, you know, some are afraid to admit. Some do admit. They're not that afraid, but...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the majority still, you know,
right,
believe that it never happened. You know.
Now you've got this. You've got a great documentary. It was last year that you came out with it. Women of 1915. Are you still presenting this? And this has won some awards. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really submitting to film festivals at this point, because we're still working on the international version of the film for international distribution. So, but we did get invited. I mean, we didn't even apply for some film festival. We got invited by some, and I'm very happy to say that, you know, they gave us their top awards. For example, you know, we got the Armin T. Wegner Humanitarian Award at the ARPA Film Festival in Hollywood. We got the, in Canada, in Toronto, at the Pomegranate Film Festival. Last year, they had 7 awards that they gave out, and we got 3 out of the top 7 awards.
That's amazing.
Over there.
That's big time. That's nice.
Yeah, Audience Award. We got the Golden Palm Award, and we got the Best Documentary Award in that festival. And, yeah, I mean, we're not really we haven't really submitted to any film festival per se, but what we're doing is we're being invited from literally all over the world to show this film as to focus groups. For example, we were in Australia twice, not once but twice. We were in France. We did 6 screenings there, and the local media even praised the film. They loved it. The French people. Like I said, we had 6 screenings in France. We had one in London, all over Canada, in like 4 or 5 different cities in Canada, United States, and also being invited by universities, because this is really, in fact, an educational tool. It's an amazing educational tool, and the ultimate goal actually is to genocide prevention. Because we have to learn. We should learn from our history.
You're right.
Genocide happen. Why do they happen? If you know why they happen, how they happen, perhaps we can, by educating the younger generation, we can, take some measures and stop genocides being happening in the future. So I'm showing the film all over. Like my October is an extremely, extremely busy month. I'm going all over, and I'm going all the way to Lebanon. I'm invited to Lebanon to show the film to university group and also to the public there. So
You're definitely coming into St. Louis area too, so we're excited to have you here. And
there on the 2nd.
It's going to take, I feel that, it's amazing right now how the Armenian filmmakers, and we see the Jewish community, we've seen it throughout the filmmaking industry, how they have put that together as some big tool for their political agenda as well. And we are now getting into that realm. We did it with The Promise. Even the movie The Cut was out there. I mean, there's so many. We just had one out there right now with my friend's movie, The Last Inhabitant, Javon. And now, it just seems to me the Armenian filmmakers are stepping up, and this can be a vital tool for us in the future with the Odars. We're trying to get not just the Armenians to watch these. We're trying to get the Odar people to watch these and say, you know what, this happened. We got to look at this now.
Well, it's you raised a very important point, and the fact is, as I mentioned earlier, they are Armenian stories, right? But they are also American stories. I'll give you an example. I mean, when the genocide happened in 1915, the first and largest group that mobilized humanitarian efforts were the Americans. So, America, the current generation that exists now, they don't even know how, their grandfathers and grandmothers, rushed into the genocide fields and saved thousands of Armenians. I mean, it's an amazing humanitarian effort that they did. I can give you one example of this American organization, Near East Relief. They saved single-handedly 130,000 Armenian and Greek orphans from the genocide, from the Turkish genocide of 1915. This is one organization. They had huge fundraisers. They had, it was in their daily news. It was the headlines every single morning, every single day. They looked at the newspapers. It was written about the Armenian genocide, what was going on. A nation was being destroyed. And they rushed and saved them from, total obliteration. They did that. But unfortunately, it's forgotten. It's our jobs, the filmmakers' jobs, the educators' jobs, to remind them of their history, what they did, how huge of a humanitarian task it was that their grandparents took upon them, and they saved, hundreds of thousands of lives.
You know,
this is an American story. I mean, in my film, mention, you know, Americans like, for example, Mary Louise Grantham. You know, she went there as a missionary. She stayed there and she died there. You know, she saved thousands of lives. She educated. She educated not only students but teachers. I mean, these people went there. They sacrificed their lives, their young lives, and they lived there. I mean, Mary Louise Grantham, you know, was the perfect example. She died of breast cancer because, you know, she was so tired of, you know, and exhausted. And then she died there and she was buried there. You know, why she was. Another one is, you know, this lady, for example, what was her name? Let me give you an example of a European lady, Maria Jacobson. Maria Jacobson, at her young age of 23, 24, she went to the killing fields of the genocide, even before the genocide, when the Hamidian massacres were taking place, and she saved thousands of lives again, and then she dedicated all her life to saving Armenians, and eventually she never gave up. Even after the genocide, she raised funds. She created this orphanage in Lebanon. It's called the Bird's Nest. I don't know if you know her, if you've heard of it, Bird's Nest, which is operational to this state. And she dedicated her life to that orphanage, and she decided to die there and get buried there, even though she was a Danish lady. So she's buried there at the orphanage now. I mean, amazing personal sacrifice to save lives, you know, other lives. I mean, these are huge American and European stories. They're not only Armenian stories.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I like to back up a little bit. The movie The Cut is more exceptional to me because of the fact that it's written and directed by Fatih Akin, who's a Turk, who's Turkish. And that movie, I'm telling you, it had me in tears. And it was all Armenian perspective, you know. It was unbelievable. Have you seen that one?
I have a very interesting, yes, I have. I have a very interesting story about The Cut. Fatih Akin happens to be, I can call him a friend because I met him in Istanbul when I was there in Turkey, and we had dinner and we were discussing, you know, over dinner what happened. I said, Fatih, what did you do? Why did you do this film? Why, I mean, you're a Turk. Why did you do this Armenian film, took this risk, and, you know, 25 million euros or dollars budget film? He said, well, you know, when I was growing, I grew up, he said, in Germany, and my parents were the typical Turkish family that, you know, hated the Armenians, and they believed the opposite of the truth that happened. And I said, then why did you do it? He said, I did it because, like I said, I was lucky. I grew up in Germany. I studied there. I knew the history. I knew the facts. And I did it for my parents and parents like, you know, Turks like them, to teach them what really happened. Then I said, did your family see it? Did your parents see it? He said, yeah, they were the first to see it. I said, what did they tell you? They said they loved it, and they told me this is the best film you ever made.
Bravo.
So, I mean, this is it. This is the thing. Yeah, I mean, I love that film. It's one of my favorite films as far as the Armenian Genocide. And Fatih Akin is a really, really decent person, very nice guy, and he made this amazing film.
And he still lives in Turkey? Or he's in Germany, right? He's in Germany.
German. I mean, he's German. He's a German filmmaker of Turkish descent. Right. That's what really is.
Wow.
But he was in Turkey. He showed his film in Turkey. He got a lot of, bad reviews there. Because,
of course,
you know,
of course. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's about it. We could talk for hours, man. I love what you're doing, and to me, you are. And people like you that are putting this out to the public, not only for the Armenians, but to the world out there to see, you're just as effective to me as the soldiers in Artsakh or any young man or woman out there that have defended our lands, because what you're doing is you're giving awareness and keeping that torch lit. I think that that's the most important thing, that we can't let it die out. And the Turks, like I said,
many moons ago on this show, they're banking. The odds are on their side that someday that this will die out and everything. Like Genghis Khan when he did all the massacres on the Chinese. You never hear about the genocide on the Chinese people anymore. You hear Genghis Khan was a great conqueror. And that's throughout history. History changes like that. And we have to keep that torch lit to where that word genocide keeps up, and that torch is lit for the word genocide. And it's going to take people like you throughout the centuries to keep that thing lit up like that. So, you know, I think it's very important.
Thank you. I mean, I believe that maybe, I'm not exaggerating, perhaps once a month we have to, you know, offer a film like this to, you know, to the public, and a genocide-themed or Armenian-themed film, you know, good films, films that interest the non-Armenians too. That's a key, because they have to see, you know, to see the truth, the story, you know, the real story behind it, because that's what happened. I mean, it's a part of our life. It's something that we need to discuss and let the next generation know about it. We can let these things die out, and we can do it. You know, I mean, people like me or the filmmakers that you mentioned, Armenian and non-Armenian filmmakers. The only thing is, we need the support. You know, it's a teamwork. You know, it's not. And
it's,
unfortunately,
folks,
the worst thing,
yeah, it's not cheap having a Bada go to Australia or down to Argentina. There's got to be a support base for that as well.
And I'm glad to say that. I'm very happy and proud to say that there is the support there, but we need more. You know, we need
more
to make more films like this. That's what it is.
Of course. Well, good luck with everything, my friend. And can't wait to see you in St. Louis. When are you coming this way?
22nd, October 22nd.
October
we're showing
22nd.
It at a movie theater in
Edwardsville, Illinois. Yeah.
Yes, Edwardsville. Correct.
That's right across the St. Louis. So when we say St. Louis, that's the same thing. Where's your next project? Where are you headed to right now? Are you headed anywhere right now? Or anything?
Right now, actually, next week I'm going to California. I'm being this is interesting too. The director of Terry George and myself are being awarded with the same award. It's called the Arts and Letters Award by the Armenian National Committee Western Region at Beverly Hills Hilton. It's happening on October 8th. That's where I'm heading. And I'm very happy and grateful about that, you know, that, you know, my work is being recognized.
Bravo. Bravo, my friend. Keep up your hard work. Keep doing what you're doing. How can people find your work on the social media?
Well, I have a very active Facebook page, Bared Maronian. If you go there, everything is there, you know, all the information, upcoming events, and what we've done, what we're planning on doing, it's all there. So it's Bared Maronian.
And we'll have that on our site as well. Whenever we put your name out and all that, we'll have that all out there. So they can, once they click on, they can click onto your site as well, and they'll find you. So, hey, thank you so much, Bada. Thank you, and I'm glad I found you. I'm glad Stephen Hagopian, he gave a shout-out. He said, you got to get a hold of Bada and have him on your show. So I said, let's do it. So thank you, my friend, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. What an interesting guy. What an interesting guy, and I am so happy that I got introduced to him.
Yeah.
And he was part of the show.
It was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah. And you know, you never think about the women that did something as well. And that's no offense to the women listeners out there. But, you know, you always think of all the men that did the fighting and stuff. But, again, I mean, Brian, there was so much catastrophic type of psychological stuff that the women endured through the genocide.
Yeah.
And then to rebound and to just bounce back and just say, hey, you know what? I can do this. I can do that. And that's what Barrett brings out.
Yeah.
God bless. God bless. And I can't wait to see him and the movie here on the documentary, The Women of 1915. So that's going to be very interesting. And folks, what is interesting is Amazon, and you can definitely catch Amazon through ArmeniaProud.com. ArmeniaProud.com is sponsored by Amazon, and you can go through our site at ArmeniaProud.com. On your right-hand side is Amazon. Click on Amazon and shop to whatever you want to shop for on Amazon, and we get a little love back. So we appreciate all the love that we're seeing, and just keep doing what you're doing. Brian, it's been a good show. Thank
great.
You so much.
Yep.
The man behind the boards, my friends, Brian. Thank you. Thanks so much. And folks, stay tuned next week. We'll have another great show. And Kishir Party, we'll see you next time.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at ArmeniaProud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud or Twitter at ArmeniaProud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.